Welcome to Pax Europiana, the podcast about peace in Europe and about prosperity and EU enlargement. Now let's discuss about the situation with EU enlargement. The 1st of May is always the big day, not of labor. I'm not so much in favor of the celebration of socialist holidays, but it's a very important day for the EU enlargement, because on the 1st of May, 2004, it was the 10 countries enlargement day, where all these beautiful countries and all over, then together with the next enlargement in 2007, there were 100 million new people joining the European Union. It's a historic thing. It's absolutely amazing. It must be celebrated. It was the spirit which we need now again, obviously, for Ukraine and for the Balkans. And in order to achieve that, also for Georgia and Moldova, obviously, and for the six Balkan countries, we need to analyze a bit and celebrate, obviously, the success of the last enlargement. If we have a negative attitude towards the success of 2004, and if not, this is defined as an overall amazing success, then obviously it's getting complicated to argue for the next round of enlargement, which is with more complicated countries due to Russia's aggression and due to, obviously, the underdevelopment in the Ottoman and Yugoslavian times and Soviet times. So it's more complicated than the Central European Warsaw Pact countries, former Warsaw Pact countries, obviously. But, you know, obviously we have the challenge to understand that correctly. And here is the facts. I will now in this podcast not discuss about all the issues, but about the so-called GDP net capital ratio. And that's important because when you look at the World Bank data, worldbank.org, and you go to that website, you can type in the actual GDP in dollar terms net, that's the whole world compared on the economic output. Again, I explained the GDP is the overall economic output of a country per capita over the years, and that's then in net terms. I'm not so much in favor of this purchasing power comparison, that's for other, it's useful for other things. But for this term, the benchmark I take and I use is the one which is used in the World Bank for the European, for all countries in the world. And then it makes a lot of sense to do that in that term. And the European average is what the whole Europe is today in this term is 35,000. I repeat so everybody can follow it. The EU has $35,000 GDP per capita annual prosperity benchmark. If you want to call it prosperity benchmark, I think it's very accurate. 35,000. If you look, for example, as a, to be concrete, Austria, for example, has 50,000. So that's the situation. 50,000 Austria, it's one of the richest countries. And then you have Germany, which is obviously with unification, and they are at 46,000, and Austria has profited enormously from EU enlargement. And then let's go to what, when you look, for example, Spain, and you can type it in, and it's really, I think, a useful benchmark. Yeah? Then you see Spain is, for example, oh, where's Spain? Spain, beautiful Spain. Not so successful anymore, because Spain is already below the EU average, yeah? Now at exactly, yes, 30,000. Yeah? So that's already below. Yeah? So we have a real crisis in Southern Europe. They have not benefited so much. They have decreased because they didn't reform. Yeah? And then we have these 30 new countries. What I will do in this specific podcast, remember the benchmarks, $35,000 GDP. If you are from America, maybe also to type in the American American benchmark, it is also useful. It's now at 65,000. So you see the difference already, and it's always the numbers is from including 2019. The corona always has a different effect, but we are discussing about 65,000 compared to 35,000 of the European Union of 27 states. Yeah. If you're also interested, I can also, it's actually very useful. We have here United Kingdom, for example, that's already at 42,000. It's a bit closer to the EU average. And here we are. Now in 2000, and I will discuss about all 13 countries because it's easier to make it one group. Of course, only 10 countries have joined on the 1st of May. And I will discuss now in the level of the top priority, top prosperity, the most successful country in GDP per capita now of all these 30 new countries today in 2019, the numbers including 2019, is Malta, which is close to 30,000. Malta has started in the year 2000, which is now the benchmark year. Obviously, the enlargement was 2004, but I refer to the year 2000 because it was the start of the preparation of accession. And I obviously want to make the case for the next round of enlargement because we are now 3 years before 2024, which I call to be the new 2004, that we have another three countries in the European Union, Albania, Montenegro, and North Macedonia, and also enlarged NATO, that we have then the possibility also to get the six remaining countries into the European Union. I'm calling about Ukraine, Moldova, Georgia, Kosovo, Bosnia, and ultimately also Serbia, once it has joined NATO and adopted the euro. But when you see now the parallel with 2000 and 2021, and also the parallel 2004, the membership, and then the parallel with 2024, and the same repeat of the success story. Is it a success? Now we have the situation of Malta. Malta in the year 2000 was at $10,000. That is the benchmark. And now it is at 30. So Malta has 3 times higher GDP per capita in 20 years. I mean, that's quite a success. Yeah? The EU itself has also increased, has maybe doubled ultimately, from 16,000 to 35,000, but Malta has tripled, and it's quite a success. I mean, Malta has obviously not a socialist past. They also had a socialist period in the 70s, but Malta was not part of the communist world, and it has a different history, and it has managed in within 20 years from 10,000 to 30,000. It's quite good. And so in that respect, it's the richest new country, but it also didn't have any kind of communist past in that sense that it was not member of the Warsaw Bloc. So it's also a specific thing with the smaller islands. Then we have another smaller island, that's Cyprus. It's very close to Malta today. Malta is at 30,000 and Cyprus is at 28,000. And where has Cyprus started? Cyprus was, it is only doubled because it was 14,300. So ultimately Cyprus was of course affected quite a lot by the great financial crisis and has not recovered very well. Cyprus is one of the cases which we have, which is not really at the level of prosperity it had 2008. Yeah. That's a very specific problem then of the management of the great financial crisis. Cyprus was at 35,000 and is now only at 30,000, 28,000. So it has, it's still $7,000 per GDP below the peak of 2008. Yeah. That's a specific management issue of the Cypriot economy and the way that all was handled, and obviously that's a specific thing which is less connected with enlargement but much more connected with some bad economic decisions in Cyprus itself, and especially the big boom times which they have not managed very well before. So then we come to Slovenia. That's the next in terms of success. It's at 26. It's quite close to Cyprus with 28. But Slovenia is now the best country which comes from former Yugoslavia. It's at 26,000. 26,000, where did it start? Yeah? Slovenia was similar like Malta at 10,000. So it's 2.5 times more. And it has also recovered already from, it's about the same of the peak of the financial crisis. Yeah. So we didn't have a very good decade now after the financial crisis. But we had enormous success overall, 2.5 times better GDP for Slovenia, which is now leading the pack in terms of the new countries which came from the communist and wartime of the big crisis of the Balkans and the Balkan Wars. So Slovenia at 26,000. And next country in line is then, let me be correct, it's then Slovenia, it's then Estonia with 24,000, And that is obviously also a former Soviet Union country. It's now at 24,000 GDP per capita. Where did Estonia start? Estonia had 4,000. 4,000 is now the level of Kosovo has more today. So it was allowed in the European Union then. It's also interesting. Estonia in 2000 was already at 9,000. They had a big pre-accession boom. And that was in the early 2000s, obviously. 9,000 is now what Montenegro has. So, yeah, with Montenegro, level of prosperity was in and is now at 24,000. Amazing success. Bravo, Estonia. Yeah. Then we come to beautiful, where we are. Let me take that point. To the Czech Republic. The Czech Republic at now 24,000, quite similar to Estonia. It's very close. It's about head-to-head run, about 24,000 with the Czech Republic. Where did the Czech Republic start in 2000? 5,400. So it is quite a jump from 5,400 to 24,000. So that is almost five times better. I mean, we are coming to a multiple, which is impressive. In 20 years, five times better result from exactly 5,000. No, 6,000 in the case, 6,000, that I don't get it wrong, to 24,000. So let's, 6 to 24, it's four times. I'm sorry for that, yeah, four times. It's quite a fizzling here to see everything. So four times, not five times, four times, yeah. So let's go then to the next one, Lithuania. It's now at 20,000 GDP per capita in dollars, and it started in 3,300. So 20,000. So here we are, but here we have this five times doubling. Yes, five times, five and a half times even, if I make no mistakes. Yeah, it's quite amazing. Yeah, five and a half times Lithuania, bravo, is probably the winner when it comes to the doubling. Then we have the Slovak Republic with 20,000. So it's really head to head, 19,200 Slovak and 19,500. So head to head. Where did this country start? It started, the Slovakian Republic started in 5,000. Yeah? So it's four times more. It's okay, I think. 5,000, 4,000, it's four times more. Then we come to Croatia. I see here Lithuania. I didn't mention Lithuania. Lithuania, Estonia. Yes, they are 24,000. Estonia, 24,000. Czech Republic as well. Latvia, 20. Croatia, it's at 18,000. 18,000. In the year 2000, Croatia was at 5,000. So it's four times, it's not exactly four, three and a half times, yeah. So it's quite less than four times. It's not the most astonishing jump forward. Hungary, it's at 16,700. So that's quite good, Hungary, I think. When you see Hungary was where in 2000, it was also at 4,000. So four times better in 20 years. Then we come to Poland. Poland, obviously, big country, matters very much. It's at 16,000 or 15,700, and Poland was as 4,000. So that's four times better, the GDP. Yeah? So Bulgaria was joining a bit later. It's now at 10,000, and Bulgaria and Romania were at 1,600. So 1,600, it's about eight times, not exactly seven times. Seven times better GDP for Bulgaria. I mean, from 1,600, I make no mistake, 7 times 7, yes, it's 10,000, so that's 7 times better. Romania was at 1,600, Romania is now today at 13,000. So they have jumped from 9 times, I think 9 times, you can calculate, 9 times. 9 times better GDP per capita in Romania. Oh, and Romania is a problem. Yeah, what problem? It's 9 times better GDP per capita in dollar net terms. I think it's amazing. It's amazing. These were the two poorest countries. Obviously, they were in the year 2000 after the Kosovo War, when the decision was taken to take them in NATO and in the EU a bit later, for 2007 only. They were at 1,700 and at 1,600 respectively. I've been there. It was really very complicated 20 years there. The donkeys and, you know, it was the transport, the infrastructure. It was all very difficult and it was really like a developing country. 20 years later, at 13,000, 2019, it's big success. And Bulgaria, which you, for Romania, when you could talk about Bulgaria, it's often referred as the poorest EU member. It's true. It's only at 10,000. And by the way, Montenegro has reached that level also quite soon already. So that's why I call for Montenegro to be a member. But it's obviously true that when you see in comparison to where Bulgaria was in the year 2000, yeah, that it was at 1,600 and it's now at 10,000. It's incredible. It's not as incredible and amazing and successful like Romania. The Bulgarian situation was also more difficult in many ways. And Romania also has the advantage of being a much bigger market. It's also a size and important aspect. I'm not happy with both of the countries' reforms. You know, Bulgaria could be further if Borisov wouldn't have taken after the financial crisis this kind of control level, especially after 2014. And they have this specific issue of this JICA, this Russian prosecutor general system exported to Bulgaria. Bulgaria would definitely have better results if it would clean up its judiciary and if the EU would put a stronger emphasis on judicial independence and of prosecutorial independence of Bulgaria. That's obviously an issue. Bulgaria and Romania, and Romania especially, had the backsliding towards the socialist in the last 6 years. It was very complicated, so much political instability, people unhappy with corruption. And despite these two things, yeah, very difficult issues in the rule of law and in corruption in the political system, the economic success is so astonishing. 7 to 8 times the GDP. That's the magic of the EU internal market, of a low flat tax system of 10% in Bulgaria. Romania, not perfect. They have the 16% flat tax, but okay, it was good to have it. And they have now cut also to 10% income tax. They need still to cut to 10% of corporate tax to be perfect and to join the Eurozone, not to delay to 2028. That's obviously a problem for the growth and for prosperity of Romania. But when you see now, because we are very soon celebrating the 1st of May 2021, and you see the level, obviously the countries have not reached the EU average. You know, you can say that's not good enough. But see where they were. The EU average was 17,000. And it was they were at 1,600. You know, there was a 4 times differential in say for the most of the countries who were most of them were the Baltics and the Central Europeans between 3,000 and 6,000, and the EU average at that time was 17,000. So they were about, let's say, it was 4 times poorer, the average of most of the countries. The difference to the EU from 4,000 to 16,000, somehow approximately 4 times as a multiple, it's useful to remember. While now, for example, Slovenia is at 26,000, Cyprus at 27, and most of the countries are in average around 20,000, while the EU is at 35,000. So that is only about half of it, let's say roughly half. Yeah. So while the situation was 4 times multiple in 2000, 4 times the difference, they were just at 25% of the EU prosperity. Now they are about at 50, 60%. Yeah. Some of them are really very close. When will Slovenia reach the 35,000? Let's discuss. Or when will Cyprus reach the 35,000, the EU average? Yeah? That will be rather soon. And also Estonia is now at 26. It will take maybe another 5 years. Maybe the EU average will be reached by the next time we celebrate a round birthday by 2024 of the EU enlargement. maybe some countries will be already very close at the EU average, especially if the South is now in a big crisis and the Baltic countries are doing well. They have the competitive tax system. They have obviously the open economy. They have digitalized. They have done everything correct in terms of trading. They have obviously reformed their public administration. They have the flexible labor markets. So the Baltic countries might be very close to the EU average in 2024. And then let's come to also Bulgaria and these countries. It's of course more difficult. They are still just at 30%, yeah. But given the fact where they were in 2000, yeah, they were just at 10%. They were just at 10% of the EU prosperity back then, and now they have managed to be relatively, you know, of course, at 30%. It's not that I wish everybody to be happy. I wish everybody to be rich. But when somebody tells me that given the level of destruction of World War II, of the freezing of the communist Europe for half a century, and what exactly was the situation in the year 1990 in Eastern Europe, and somebody says today, yes, you know, the old countries should be the same, and we should be much further, we should have achieved all these things already. Yes, that's maybe theoretically a nice position to have, that you wish everybody to be the same, rich as America. Yes, I'm calling since decades now that we should be as rich as North America, and we are just far from it. Even Austria is far from the average of the United States in terms of this key benchmark. Yeah? So we have not done our reforms, yeah? And it's illusionary to think within one generation of 30 years, and then Bulgaria and Estonia and all the countries, even when they are inside our currency system, inside our internal market, inside NATO, and even if they have a competitive tax system, that they can be as rich as Austria in just 30 years after having a total different starting point, even when you see in terms of development, some countries were part of the Ottoman Empire. They were devastated by the two world wars. They were then underdeveloped and frozen and left out of the world economy by communism. And we have to see where they were in the year 1990 in terms of infrastructure, education, governmental systems, rule of law, human capacity. It was difficult, a terrible century. And even before, obviously, the countries which were part of the German Empire or of the, like, part of Poland or of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire were relatively well connected to the world economy. They were open and they were integrated. There was a customs and a currency union. But even the further you went to the east, the development of infrastructure also in the Hungarian part of the empire, it was also not so good as in the Austrian part of the empire, and it was already a lower development in that parts of Germany and Austria during until the First World War. And then all this destruction, all these disasters of the 20th century, and then to expect that within one generation everything will pick up and everything will be like in France, I mean, or in the United Kingdom, it's illusionary. We have to see the starting point. And when you see then the development of this prosperity in these 15 years of membership, it is astonishing. It is astonishing. And obviously, you know, there's issues with corruption, there's issues with the rule of law from Poland to Hungary, there's issues with a reluctance to join the Eurozone. Yes, I understand. There's issues. Some countries are more pro-Russian, like Hungary, like Bulgaria, some are less. You know, that's all true. You know, there is no perfection in this world up to now, unfortunately, and much of this must be done. But don't forget, it's the Western Europeans who didn't build the institutions because we didn't want to have a more powerful judiciary, a more powerful Frontex, a more powerful institution above the Western European states for so long that we were not ready for all these things. And in many cases, it's also the Western Europeans who have blocked the OECD membership because of low taxation, Schengen membership because of racism, and the Eurozone because of anti-solidaric feeling that we didn't want to share faster our prosperity. Yes, these are all our faults. It's our fault that we didn't build the institutions it's needed. It's our great fault that we have not united Europe earlier and have not been more generous and have not built the infrastructure which was so direly needed. And we all knew it, that the demand was similar like in Eastern Germany. But only for Eastern Germany it was done, this Aufbau Ost program. And for the Western, for the rest of Eastern Europe, they had to fund it with some EU support, yes. You know, there's some countries were generously supported, thanks a lot, you know, but it was by far less than it was needed. And now only the bigger countries like, for example, Poland are really rapidly catching up because now they are relatively rich countries and then they have the capacities. We could have been more generous much more earlier. We would have better results. But given where we are, some countries have not gone so massively upwards. Like Poland could be GDP per capita much, much bigger because they have not gone for the Eurozone. They have not completely gone for the flat tax. They had, of course, a backsliding in the judiciary. Yes, 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 yes. It's not the perfect picture I can present you. But when you come to the economic terms, when you see where we started in 2000 and where we are now in 2020 and 21, it is enormous. It is unprecedented. It's the most generous and best thing Europe ever has done in its history. This is the EU enlargement of these 13 countries. And we have to do another round in order to get the six Balkan countries and Ukraine and Moldova, Georgia into the European Union. This is the moral obligation we have. And that is also economically very useful. Because overall, all this enlargement has been benefited also the Western European workers, taxpayers and people and the whole unification process. Because that's obviously for a general internal market, it was an unprecedented successful time since 2000. We have not responded obviously so well to the great financial crisis because we have not cut the tax levels in Germany and Italy. We have not reformed. This is obviously the big failure of Mrs. Merkel and others in Berlusconi especially and also several French presidents not to respond to globalization by cutting taxes and making their economies more competitive. Yeah, that was their failure. That was their eternal fault. And also we could have done also a bigger infrastructure push already after the great financial crisis. But also Germany was not ready for the mutualization of infrastructure debt, as we now hopefully have started to be, because that's absolutely needed for the big infrastructure projects to fund them together, especially for Eastern Europe in the start, but also for the geographically disadvantaged southern European countries. Now we have already overtaken the bigger, the better countries like Lithuania, Estonia, and the more successful countries like Czech Republic, Slovenia, have already overtaken the poorer countries of southern Europe, like Greece and Portugal, and they are catching in towards Spain. They will also catch up towards Italy soon, because when you see, and that's obviously the big topic now, it's the question of southern European prosperity when you and reforms, because the Eastern Europeans have reformed and they have caught up, yeah, and they have all this success now. But when you add in the southern Europeans, yeah, and you add in especially obviously Greece, which is a very specific case, yeah, but there is ultimately not a big difference between, let's say, Greece and Macedonia and Greece and Bulgaria when it comes to economic and geographic terms. And you see that, for example, when you add now, Italy is about the EU average. So Slovenia will catch up very soon and Estonia as well. Spain is a little bit below at 29,000. So some countries will be very soon over the Spanish level. And then Portugal is already today at 23,000. And that's the same level of Estonia. That's the same level of Czech Republic. Slovenia is already significantly richer. Cyprus as well. And so on and so on. And you see then Latvia is at 18,000. That's the level of Croatia. If you want to add Croatia as a southern European country, I just have to find Greece as well. Where can be Greece now? Greece is at 20,000. At 20,000, that's the same level like Portugal is at 21,000. So Greece and Portugal just in the middle of all the new countries. Yeah? with Croatia, Poland a bit behind and Romania, but catching up. But we have already, how many countries are already richer than Portugal? We have Estonia richer than Portugal. We have also Slovenia richer than Portugal. We have Cyprus richer than Portugal. We have also then Malta richer than Portugal, and so on and so on, you know, and the others are catching up. Hungary at 17,000, catching up. Latvia catching up. Slovakia still below Portugal with 20,000, but catching up. And then, yeah, Greece and Slovakia in a tight race. And we are in that kind of situation. And the socialist, more socialist tax systems of Southern Europe, they will not bring higher growth now after Corona. While the very competitive tax systems and the currency stability of Eastern Europe will also, and that everybody has the same, and the conditions are basically the same. But the competition is different because of the tax systems. That's the big variant. And so we really will see that Eastern Europe will overtake most of Southern Europe by the end of 2030. It doesn't take a rocket scientist when you have this growth side, and I think not Romania will not catch up with Italy in 2030. It might be taking, basically Romania will be richer than Italy by 2040, I would estimate. It will take another 20 years, because when you see the same trajectory and the same growth system working, then you can easily see that Romania will have another 7 times multiple. That would be unbelievable. This will be like China. Imagine countries growing for another 4 times of GDP over the next 20 years. They will be richer than Austria in 2040 because we have the so-called Schnachnasen in the power. That's the problem. We don't cut taxes. We don't reform. We don't open. We don't digitalize. And we will be left behind. Yeah. Maybe the families will stay relatively rich as long as we can afford the pension system. But the general level will be that Eastern Europe in another 20 years will, most countries will have overtaken Southern Europe, and they will reach into the Western European prosperity zone. And that's very good. That's why we built Europe. What we need now to do, and what is important, is to celebrate enlargement, understand the success, make also the Balkans and Ukraine more competitive. That's also very important. Include them in our currency and internal market and custom system, and make sure that enlargement is feasible by the progress of Albania, Montenegro and Macedonia to be now in 2024 in, and also to extend NATO at the same time, and the Eurozone obviously by unilateral adoption, in order to make the next big enlargement wave in 2029 with the 6 countries moving in, similar like Bulgaria and Romania. Yes, they are complicated, and Croatia, they had to wait a bit more, but also the 6 ones like Georgia, Moldova and Ukraine and Serbia, Kosovo, Bosnia, they will move into the EU29, and it will make the similar miracle of prosperity and freedom like the last enlargement round was. And that is what we have to do. And that's the moral, historic and economic priority for Europe. In order to get this done, it's very beneficial for the whole internal market. It's good for our security. It's good for the whole global significance of the European project. All these aspects matter. But this podcast now specifically about the GDP, net per capita, check all this data yourself at the World Bank website. It's all available. It's all online. I just read you the facts. Yeah, and this is how it is. This is how amazing enlargement is. And this is what we need to repeat. This is, in order to repeat it, we need to celebrate it. Shame on all EU politicians who talk not positively about the EU enlargement of 2004, now on the 1st of May. Shame on all who want to exclude the new countries and sacrifice them towards Russia or turn them into a buffer zone. Yeah, these are terrible people. And bravo for all leaders who have the courage to tell the facts and lead the people towards more unity and openness. This is what politicians have to do and nothing else. So thanks a lot for celebration of this enlargement. I will make more podcasts about it, but also very clear for the celebration of the next round of enlargement. That's the task of the European Union. That's why we have it, not for Paris global power projection purposes, but for the prosperity of all of us and the unity for all Europeans into the European Union. Thanks a lot for listening, for Unity, and for EU 37.